All right, Melissa?
Just me, myself, and I today.
All right, good. And you can put the mic up closer.
So my question is, I have two. The first one is in Proverbs 16, 2 and 3, and it says, all the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes, but Yahweh weighs the spirits. Commit your works to Yahweh, and your plans shall be established. When I read this, it also reminded me of in Revelation when he has the scales and he weighs the balance. And so for about 16 years, I wondered, what is he weighing? What spirits is he weighing? How do we have a balance? And, you know, that concerns me greatly for my own walk.
Give me the verse again.
It's 16, 2 and 3, Proverbs 16, 2 and 3.
Okay. All right, so... Look.
And also 11, all right, scale and balances are of Yahweh. All the weights of the bag are his work. So.
Right. All right. So the context of scripture is often a contrast between two things, good and evil, right and wrong. Okay. The above versus the below, heavenly versus earthly, fleshly versus spiritual, right? These type of things. Now, here he's trying to tell you the difference between what you think is right, what you think are clean. He says, all the ways of man are clean in his own eyes. Not necessarily in Yahweh's eyes, but in your eyes. Okay? And so he's trying to show the balances of these things. He says, to the man, verse 1, to man belongs the preparations of the heart, but from Yahweh is the answer of the tongue. So he's saying, it's man's job to prepare his heart, but Yahweh's going to give the answer to whether or not that's correct or not, what you're doing. He says, all the ways of man are clean in his own eyes, but Yahweh weighs the spirits. In other words, Yahweh's going to weigh your intent. Remember, we talked about spirit being the fullness of your intent. He's going to actually, I know people love to use that line, well, he knows my heart, but he does. And that's the problem that you should be afraid of. This is what he's talking about by weighing the spirits. He knows your intention. You think you're doing right, but you're not. Okay? Look, many of you make this mistake. Us ladies, you especially, and don't get mad at me, but you do things for people that you're saying you're just trying to help, but you're really not trying to help them, you're trying to help you. Because you don't like what they're doing. You're afraid they're gonna mess something up. It's about you. You think it's about them. You convince yourself that it's clean because you're saying it's about them, but it's not, it's about you, okay? And that's why it blows up in your face and they get mad at you. Like, but I was just trying to help. And if you've ever gotten in trouble and said the words, but I was just trying to help, I'm talking about you. Okay? Because remember, I've taught you this. It's only helpful if the person you're doing it for thinks it's helpful. Okay? So here a man is doing something, but his intention is not right. But he's decided that he's right. Just like you when you're doing something you think is helpful to somebody and it's not. Even though it may actually get a result that seems helpful, but they don't appreciate it because they did not want that. Maybe they wanted to figure it out themselves. Maybe, try that with a child when they start to get to that level of, leave me alone, I want to do it myself. And you go to do something, I can do it, I can do it. They yell at you, right? Okay, I can do it. Okay, yes, I was at your house today, I heard all that. Okay, so, but that's, that's not helpful then if you try to do it for them. They need to figure it out. And then you look at them and say, fine, if you need help, ask me. Go ahead and do it yourself. Even though you know it's going to blow up because you know they're not ready, but so what? They need to learn the lesson. Let them learn it. But here he's saying is all the ways of man, all the way, okay, so the intention of man, what's the real intention there? I don't want to clean up the mess. I don't want them to get hurt. I don't want the thing to get broken. So it's really about you. But you don't want to see it that way. But Yahweh weighs the spirits. He knows that it's about you, not about them. Well, here's the same thing. You think it's clean when it's not clean. Master, master, we did all these things in your name. He's like, no. I didn't know you. You were doing lawlessness, but you thought you were doing right things. Look, I know I say a lot of things about Christianity. I truly believe most Christians think they're doing the right thing. I truly believe that they fully are making whatever effort to whatever they understand to do the right things, even though they're not. But in their mind, all their ways are clean. When they do Sunday, eat pork, do Christmas, they think those things are clean. They're not doing it thinking they're not clean. Okay, but Yahweh weighs the spirits. What spirits is he weighing? The spirit in man versus the spirit of Elohim. Okay, the above versus the below. the flesh versus the heavenly, okay? The spiritual versus the worldly. I mean, that earthly. So he's weighing what's really driving you, okay? So then it says, commit your works to Yahweh and your plans will be established. And so when you get down to, verse 11, he says, a right scale and balances are of Yahweh. In other words, he's the one that weighs things correctly. All the weights in the bag are his work. In other words, he's measuring things correctly. You're not. Not always. Okay? Did that answer the question?
So to balance the scales, we have to keep all his laws because everything else is an abomination. If it's not his and his ways, then it's an abomination from everything that I read.
Okay. I think you're missing the point. The point isn't that we balance the scales. The point is that we figure out to do what's clean and what's right in his eyes. What he's telling you about scales is that when he measures you, he weighs things correctly. So when he compares what you did to what you should have done, his weights are balanced correctly.
Oh, okay.
Okay? So it's not about you balancing the scales. He's using the scales as part of how he's explaining how he judges you. Okay?
Okay. May I ask one more?
Sure.
Okay, so in Revelations 18:4, and he uses the cameo of the churches, but it has to do with what I'm asking. And I heard another voice from the heavens saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. And then in Revelations 18:23, and it said, the light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore at all, and the voice of the bridegroom and bride shall not be heard not anymore at all. For your merchants were the great ones of the earth, for by your drug sorcery, all the nations were led astray. And so I look at that one, and I know the merchants, I think that represents the Pharmakia. And then there's different scriptures on this, but then in Revelations 21:8, it says, but as for you cowardly and untrustworthy and abominable and murderers and those who whore and drug sorcerers and idolaters and all the false, their part is in the lake which burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. And so my question is about prescription drugs. I know the merchants. And who else are the drug sorcerers? Should we...
Okay, hold on. Okay, this is a common thing that comes out of, I don't even know where it comes out of, Christianity or a lot of the messianics. Drug sorcery is not medication, okay? It's sorcery. Which means that they're doing things to gain some benefit or using some drugs to get some enhanced thing. This is not medical. So stop looking at the pharmaceutical industry as drug sorcery. Now, there are some terrible things that come out of the pharmaceutical industry, but this is not what it's talking about here. Drug sorcery. You got to go back to the world where they were using chemicals as sorcery. And it wasn't necessarily to heal people when they were sick. But you have to know people that were in that dark part of the world what drug sorcery really is. Okay, it was used to get some sort of advantage, dominance, power. Is that not correct, those of you that would know? Okay? And so the merchants were also about dominance, control, and power. When it says about the merchants of the earth, the great ones of the earth, and the drug sorcery. So stop using that as a way to attack the pharmaceutical industry just because you've heard other people do that. All right. There's some very, very good reasons why life has gotten longer, and a lot of it is pharmaceutical. There are some actual good medications and drugs that have been developed out there that have helped people with a lot of really terrible things. And there's others that have probably caused more harm than good. And you need to figure that out. But let's not take the whole thing and throw it all into the same category. But it's not drug sorcery. It's sorcery. It's not just drugs. Okay? The sorcery part you're missing. And if you don't know what sorcery is all about because you've been blessed not to be in that world and be happy you were, then you have a hard time understanding what it's talking about here. Okay? But if you've been in the dark world, dark arts, dark whatever, you know what drug sorcery is. And it's not what the pharmaceutical industry necessarily is doing. They're trying to provide you with things that at least on the surface, for the most part, is medication. It's designed to handle and address a particular malady in your body, okay? Drug sorcery is about power. It's about dominance. It's about getting something you wouldn't get otherwise. You know what would be more like drug sorcery to some degree? Like steroids to try to be stronger than everybody and faster than everybody. That's more like drug sorcery. Using chemistry to gain an advantage. But we're talking about it in a much more nefarious way than just being stronger or faster, okay? Okay, does that make sense? All right, good. So I just hopefully we can get to that. Okay, Ashley.
I have two questions. One, I've been rewatching The Chosen until it gets to the funky parts, but I'm confused on one of the
characters. I'm confused which parts are the funky parts, but that's okay. I think there's plenty of them in almost every episode, but that's just me.
I mean the confusing parts when it gets to the cross and that whole thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't understand why I was at the boat scene where he was, they were walking on water, and why are they conjoining two people, Simon and Peter? Like, because I originally was Simon and...
Okay, so Simon is referred to as Simon or Peter. Okay, so that... When you read about Peter, it's really Simon Peter, okay? He had two names. One would be more the Greek name, more of his Hebrew name. So you have the two names. It's the same
person.
It's like
a nickname?
Look, it's again... Look, I have a brother-in-law. His name is Constantine. His name is Costa. But he goes by Gus.
Okay?
I don't know why. I don't know how you get Gus out of Constantine, but I guess in the Greek culture, a lot of people with that name go with the name Gus or whatever. So he was known by both names. Just like Shaul was known also as Paul. Okay? Okay? Shaul, which would be Saul, not Paul, was also known as Paul. Okay? And so it's just one of those things. So I know that can get confusing, but when you hear Simon and Peter, it's talking about the same person.
So it is 100% the same person.
Same person.
Okay.
And that's consistent scripturally as it was in the representation in The Chosen. Okay?
Okay. I was fine until on the bone. Then he said Peter. I'm like, who's this Peter person?
It's the same guy.
Okay, perfect. And then my second question is, right out the gate, I want you to understand, we are going to obey what you recommend about tucking deceit season when we go on, I guess, vacation this week. But I want to have a better understanding of that because where I came from... And not to bring that up again, but I was told you stand up for what you believe in and you are to die for it. So when you tuck in cheat
sheets. Look. There's one thing to stand up for what you believe in because somebody is making you not do something. Mm-hmm. There's another thing that's just wisdom and safety. There's no reason to tempt and bring something upon yourself that you can avoid. So tzitzit, while I believe, are intended to be a warrant on the outside. It doesn't say that in the scripture, but it seems to me that's the most functional way that it would be useful to everybody who sees them. But if you're going into a place where at this time it would make you a target because there's a lot of anti-Semitism going on with what's going on in Israel with Gaza and everything like that, and people wearing tzitzit may be attacked, it may be some wisdom to wear them tucked in if you're in those places. Now, I don't wear them tucked in here. This isn't one of the places where there's really a whole lot of problem with it. If I was walking around in a big city where I know that's where there's been stuff happening like of late, where you hear it in the news, I may be more cautious about that. There's no reason to put myself and my family at risk. That's unnecessary, okay? But that's contrast that with like the Maccabees when they said, look, eat this pork or we're going to kill you. No, I'm not eating the pork. Go ahead and kill me. Okay, that's different. Okay? So I'm not going to break a command under any circumstance. But there are other opportunities where we do tuck in our tzitzit. If you are in a job with heavy machinery and stuff where if that your tzitzit were to get, or anything, you can't have anything loose on your clothing because if it gets caught in the machine, you're in big trouble. You must tuck them in. Okay? If you're working in a job where they have a uniform that doesn't allow for your tzitzit, you have to wear them tucked in because you're wearing them. That's the point. Okay, you're wearing them. I'm not going to let anybody make me not wear them. But whether I wear them out or not, I'm going to make the choice based on the wisdom of the moment. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes, and then another thing just popped in my head. This is all I have at home minus two other shirts. Would you recommend me going to the store and just buying a whole bunch of t-shirts to go, or is this okay?
Oh, in other words, if you're going to be walking around where you're going to, you don't want to be wearing necessarily wearing an MTOI, you know, thing.
It helps with my behavior. I'm like, well, I got to be appropriate. And
look, I don't know where you're going. You can talk to me about it later. But the thing is, if you're going to some place that is currently having people get attacked for wearing things that say Israel on it, then probably wisdom would say wear things that don't say Israel on it. Okay? There's no reason to create an opportunity to be a target more than we would already be. All right? And so I would certainly do that. Look, take this to a similar type of thing. We have an election coming. I remember the last election. There were people beat up for wearing a MAGA hat. Okay? So, you know, I told my wife, for example, who happens to like Trump, you know, and wears these type of things from time to time, when she went to New York and was walking around New York, I said, please don't wear that in New York. Because you can get beat up for that and create a problem for you and the children, because there are people there that really will react that way to that kind of thing. And it's not, if something's not necessary but can bring more safety, then don't do it. Oh, but I want, no, don't get in people's faces and stir them up when you don't know what crazy people are going to do. And I'm from New York City. I know what crazy looks like. Okay? All right? I mean, I was walking on the street and I watched a guy walking, because in New York, they'll walk across the street no matter what the light is, okay? They'll just expect the cars to stop, okay? People just, they don't even look. They just walk, okay? And so somebody will naturally then honk the horn at them, and I saw a guy honk the horn at the guy who he almost hit, the truck was driving, and the guy basically pulled out a baseball bat and started smashing the truck, okay? How dare you honk your horn at me while I was rudely crossing the street against the light? People are crazy. And so you have to be proactively, you know, we talk about, if you ever took driver's ed and that kind of thing, defensive driving, right? Which means you drive knowing that other people might cause a problem. You have to practice defensive living, okay? Knowing that the world is crazy, and they are, and it's a dangerous place. So I'm not going to poke people on purpose if it's unnecessary. Now, if I do something necessary and it happens to poke somebody, that's one thing. But I'm not going to just poke people for no reason, okay? Look, I teach every week poking everybody, but it's necessary, all right? You're welcome. All right, Isaiah?
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.
I have a bunch of questions written down. I was going to ask about the different verses in Hebrews about sacrifice, but then you said some things that made me want to get to my heart in the matter. So I'm going to change that. Just remembering you who speaks the word Elohim to me and the outcome of your conduct, and so thus imitating that as it tells me to do in Hebrews. I have this other question on, I wrote, what do we do about trauma, and where is the biblical answer? If I can kind of say some things about that. Going back in Deuteronomy 10, I think 16, or is it 13? 16, it says, circumcise the foreskin of your hearts and be no more stiff-necked, or harden not your neck, or something like that.
Right.
Stiff-necked. Yeah, I find that I'm a lot like what Paul wrote in Romans 7. You go through Romans 7, you find that he's kind of like almost going in this circle and the dichotomy of self, you know, and he says, after going through, like kind of showing that he's got, you know, these human cycles, I find therefore this law that when I wish to do good, that the evil is present with me. That's Romans 7:21. For I delight in the Torah of Elohim according to the inward man, but I see another Torah in my members battling against the Torah of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the Torah of sin, which is in my members. And so all thanks be to God, I've reached this place of absolute conviction, not to just pursue to do, but I'm doing Torah. I don't care what it takes. And I know it's because of what I've been through, and right. he caused that for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But like it's almost like because of the things that I've allowed or exposed myself to, you know, I've created this other nature, this law in my members, in my flesh, that now I'm, you know, I'm battling, and it's like a I don't know. I bring it to the Yahweh and I say, thank you, Father, letting me see these things in me so that I can bring it to you and like take captive every thought and imagination and bring it to you. Again, in 1 Thessalonians 4:3, the Father brought me to that to possess our vessels in set apartness and respect to Yahweh.
Right.
So it's really like this process where I am being challenged to do, as you teach, that it's up to me to take captive and take a hold of and to do the Torah. I don't think the Father's ever going to remove it. When I was a Christian, I really believed that it would be removed, you know. So the question is what do you deal with? What do you do about trauma with Scripture? Like, where are the scriptural answers?
All right. I appreciate the question. I'm not really sure how the question is connected to some of these things, but I can see there's a little bit there. The point is, first of all, this is one of the reasons why I said I think at some point I need to really actually spend the time working on a translation. When you're reading Romans, please take the word Torah out. Not that it's not appropriate in some places, but just put the word law. And sometimes it's referring to the law of Elohim. Sometimes it's referring to the law that's in your own members, your self-sovereign law. Yeah. But to use the word Torah everywhere misses the point, because in your brain, you're not just hearing the word Torah as instruction and right ruling according to whatever source. You're hearing Torah meaning Yahweh.
Okay? Oh, I didn't confuse
that. No, I know you myself. Didn't. I'm telling this for everybody else. Yeah. No, I didn't think you did. But I'm just saying, because when you read it in the 2009, it's even worse than it is in the 98. The 98, that doesn't put the word Torah in quite as much. In the 2009, they put it everywhere. And it confuses things. Yes, sometimes the word law there is referring to the law of Elohim. It isn't referring to the Torah. Sometimes it's referring to the law of man, what you think is right and wrong. And that's the differences that Paul's talking about struggling against. That law that is his own law doesn't line up with what he knows is of Elohim, and he struggles, this inner struggle that's going on. Okay? Now, trauma. Okay, so trauma has, and really, it's one of the biggest things that we end up counseling about as people are dealing with the effects, the long-term effects of trauma. And, okay, I don't want to minimize what you're going through with trauma, all of you that are dealing with trauma, which is almost everybody. But one of the things that you have to find a way to embrace, and this is, well, let's deal with two types of trauma. Past trauma, current trauma, okay? Current trauma we'll deal with first. With current trauma, you need to find a way to get the trauma to cease, okay? So first things first is ending the trauma, okay? Now, I've got a bunch of married people that need to not be married because their trauma is never going to end until they do that. Of course, that's going to set a new trauma in place, okay? And so you have to find a path to the end of the trauma. In other words, the ongoing thing that's causing the pain and suffering has got to end. Now, of course, for most of you, then we deal with the past trauma, which means that even when it ends, you keep suffering because of the experience that created this thing we call trauma, or as people call it, a PTSD response, which is post-trauma, but you're still feeling these reactions as if you're still in trauma. So the next thing you need to do with counsel, therapy, whatever it is find a way to reprogram your mind to recognize the trauma has actually stopped. So you keep reliving the trauma because you haven't fully accepted that it's no longer a threat or ongoing thing, that it actually has ended. Not to say that the consequences or the effects of the trauma haven't all gone away, but the trauma itself is not ongoing. You're not, okay? So if you were, you know, as you were, if you had been incarcerated at any point, that's a trauma. You've described it. I mean, it was horrible. But you're not there anymore. But there are people, when they do get out, that still have the trauma effects because they haven't embraced that they're not there anymore. Okay, maybe you went through a traumatic relationship. Maybe you had a trauma with your parents when you were younger. And those things are no longer ongoing or happening. But yet you keep living and reacting to life as if they are. And so you have to address that you're having a reality now versus past problem. And again, that may need some sort of therapy with experts who know how to deal with your specific type of trauma. Because the damage, you know, we're not talking about just something bad happened. It was traumatic, which means it was big. It had a big effect on your whole system, mindset, psyche, everything, okay? Because some horrible thing happened, you know? I had an unfortunate discussion with this lady who was in her 70s at the time, and, you know, she had been sexually assaulted as a, I can't remember what she said, 4, 5, or 6-year-old, something like that, okay? And then it never happened again. Now, I'm not minimizing that. That is awful and horribly traumatic. But she was still living in that trauma 70 years later. And she would give me all kinds of grief back and forth about stuff. And I finally had to say to her, I said, look, your problem is you've never addressed your trauma. What are you talking about? I've been a therapist and I've, but all you did was just talk about your trauma, but you never addressed it because you have not been in danger since you were 5. Nobody's ever threatened you since you were 5. Nobody's approached you to attack you since you were 5. Okay? You've been safe, essentially, since you were 5. You're also now an adult and can protect yourself, which you couldn't do when you're 5. You've never adjusted to the new reality. You're still living as a 5-year-old who is helpless and abused. I can't get you to make that leap. You have to make that leap. And the way you make it is you have to win the argument in your own head that the things that allowed it and caused it to happen when you were 5 or 10 or whatever it was, not now, but in the past, look at what's different now. Would that still happen now with what you know? No, you could prevent it. You could see it coming. You learned from it, okay? Or if it's something you couldn't have seen coming and you couldn't have prevented and realized, there's no reason being upset about it because something like that is something I can't see coming anyway. So if something like that terrible, look, some of you are going to either you or a family member get in an awful traveling accident, like car accident at some point in your life. You're going to know somebody because lots of people get in a, you cannot necessarily foresee that happening. So what are you going to do? Drive freaked out every day knowing it could happen to you or somebody else? You can't function with the things you can't control. And if it's something you realize, what I know now, I'd never allow that to happen again, well then, why don't you embrace that and stop walking in the trauma of what happened, because you know now you would never let that happen again. Because you could, and by the way, also accept, don't blame yourself. If you were, especially if you were a young child, there was nothing you can do. Please, just accept that there was nothing you could do. Don't find some reason that to blame yourself like you should have done something. You probably could do nothing. And then maybe even if you tried to do something, it only would have made it worse. And so a lot of the trauma response that needs to be, the way to fix it is you have to bring the current reality into play in conjunction or in contrast to the previous reality where the trauma happened so that you can embrace that you're not there anymore. Okay? I'm not saying that's an easy thing to do, but that's really what we're talking about. I'm here now. None of this stuff that happened over here is happening at the moment. And it's not likely to happen because I know a lot of stuff now that I didn't know then. And so I don't need to live my life in this trauma response because that reality is not my current reality. Look, I mean, horrible things happen to people. And you know what? Some people never get past it and others do. I don't know the secret except it has to do with how they have chosen to understand that where they are now is not where they were then. Yes, that stuff happened, and it was awful, whatever it was. I mean, if you're still traumatized many years later, it must have been really horrible, okay? I'm not going to minimize that at all, but it's not happening now. And all you're doing is empowering whoever did the terrible thing to you to continue to do horrible things to you, at least up here, because you're still reliving the trauma. Why are you letting that person wreck your life? Well, because they did wreck my life. No, they did terrible things to you then. You can reset your life. Yeah. Okay? It is possible to reset. Other people do. And they're not better than you. They just maybe got the right counsel to help them really feel and truly embrace that they're not the same person they were when it happened. They're not in the same place when it happened. And they're not at the same risk they were at that time. So there's no reason to live in that level of fear. Because that's really when people are traumatized, is that they have the fear of it continuing, happening again, and they're always like in this place of, oh my gosh, what if it happens again? Well, really, is it really likely to happen again? Okay? Especially the things that happened when you were really young and you trusted the wrong people, but you didn't know they were the wrong people. You trusted the people you should have trusted, but they betrayed your trust when it was a family member or whatever it was. And so, you know, there are sick people in the world, but it's not everybody. And now you're an adult, and now you should be able to protect yourself, see the signs, know what to look for, and be safe most of the time. Still bad things do happen to people, but then those are things that you never could have prevented anyway, so there's no reason to worry about it. Okay? Okay? Terrible things happen to people all the time. Look, do you know, there are people you know right now that are going to all of a sudden have cancer and die on us. Like, surprise, boom. Aggressive cancer. You know what? You don't know if it's going to be you or not, but what are you going to do? Be afraid of it every day now? Freaking out that it could be you? See, that would be stupid. Or I should say foolish. It is going to happen, though, to somebody. Every day, I hear somebody tell me, I just got a phone call. My sister's friend, out of nowhere, just got aggressive cancer and passed away. At age, some young age, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. It happens. Could it happen to you? Absolutely. So you're going to do what? Walk, live life afraid of that? They didn't see it coming, neither will you if it's you. So live life the best you can and not worrying about all these things. Does that help at all, Isaiah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I guess my intention to reading like Romans 7:23 is... I think there's like this different kind of trauma that really you've helped me through... in a lot of these conversations. One day you said something that has always stuck with me. It basically was forgive yourself. And so, you know, I'm not in trauma. I'm not in a place where, like, that's ongoing or anything like that. And it isn't, it's more like, and I think that a lot of people probably deal with, I made choices based on trauma, based on the emotions that I had from the trauma, the choices that I thought were to like soothe pain and the residual effects of it. So then therefore
it compounded.
Kinda, well, yeah. Well, I held myself in a position where yeah. I couldn't like address the trauma appropriately because then I didn't have the right to any longer because of the way I responded to it.
Right.
And so, yes, it compounded. I caused myself my own trauma, kind of betraying myself. And then therefore, like, okay, so in finding the truth, there were some things that I knew that I didn't, you know, but I was still responding to trauma and sinning against what I knew. And so, yeah, I was in this compounded place of trauma, and right. I'm not necessarily there anymore. When I wrote this down, like, I was in that place and in trusting people who were not worthy of trust, not necessarily trusting them, but just seeing so much that I'm like...
All right, look, let me say something from more of a group therapy point of view because a lot of you have trauma, okay? I want you to honestly, I mean personal honesty for yourself, okay? I want you to honestly accept that when whatever happened, happened, the way you responded to it, either you allowed it or didn't do anything or you fought back, but you whatever it was you did, the person you were then, that was all you could have done. You think, because you're looking at yourself now thinking, I would do something different, but you're not that person now. The person you were then did all that you as that person could have done then. That's where you need to forgive yourself for any thought that you should have done more, could have done more, somehow could have prevented it. You were not the person that could have done any of that. Okay? You need to accept that reality about who you were then. Because you keep thinking now, especially, let's say something happened when you were 4 or 5 years old and now you're 30 years old. Well, sure, you'd think you'd do something different now, but you're not five. The five-year-old you couldn't do what you're thinking now. So stop guilting yourself and beating yourself up and thinking somehow this is your fault, you should have done something, what would you have done? What could you really have done at that point that you didn't do? If you could have, you would have. The you that you were, even if there was something you could have done, but the you were couldn't do it. You were not in an emotional place where you could do it. You were too afraid. You couldn't do it. You did what you could. Allow and accept that it's okay. You did all you could do at that moment. Stop beating yourself up for that. Blaming yourself. That's why I told Isaiah to forgive himself. Okay? Okay, the you were then did only what the you were then could do. Look, all of us who are old enough have done all kinds of things we're embarrassed about, ashamed of in our lives. And you know what? You look back and you say, I'd never do that now. But you're not that person anymore. Amen. That person did those things. And if you were still that person, you would still do those things. Thankfully, we're not that person anymore. This is the picture of the burying the old man and coming out as a new person.
Yeah.
A new creation. Okay? Because if you were still that person, you'd still do those things. And by the way, when you still do some of those things, that's because that old person pops out of the dead grave, so to speak, and takes over you for a minute, and you start acting like you used to act. Because that person doesn't want to die. But when you're dealing with trauma, please have that personal, honest integrity to look back and recognize that you did the you were then, all you could have done. Okay? Even though you look back and say, oh man, I should have done it. No, but you were at that moment in that crisis, in the emotion and the crisis of the, you couldn't make that. Maybe there was something you could have reacted and did, but you were so traumatized, you couldn't. You're so in fear, you were so panicked. That's a real reaction. Be okay that that's where you were.
Yeah.
I know you wish you'd had done, but you couldn't. That person you were couldn't do it. Please accept that so that you can have peace. Okay? But also accept that the you are now, because you know better, has a very ridiculously small possibility of it ever happening again because you know better.
Amen.
And you have different strength now. You have different understanding now. You become a different person than the person who was so afraid and so weak and really vulnerable, probably because you were so young, that what you're expecting out of that person is ridiculous that you would expect at that point you could have handled all these things. Amen. And so have peace that child that you were had been traumatized by whatever it was, knowing that you couldn't have done anything, okay? You really couldn't. All right.
Amen. Thank you.
And by the way, let's even add to it. Any family member that allowed it, not just the ones that caused it, forgive them too, because the person they were wasn't capable of protecting you, okay? Their flaws, their weaknesses, their whatever, because you're going to go blame mom, blame dad, blame this one, blame. Stop blaming them. The person they were was not capable of keeping you safe, mm-hmm. was not capable of doing the right thing. That's horrible, but you can forgive them, Father. They don't know what they do, okay? Otherwise, you're going to then suffer the rest of your life because you can't get through that. They're going to go on doing whatever miserable, dumb things they're doing. Of course, they'll stay miserable. But why should you keep suffering by something that was done to you so long ago that's not ongoing?
Amen.
Okay? And that's where a lot of you get stuck in your emotional trauma. All right.
Yeah, and I'm just so thankful for the scriptures, for the teaching. I find that I'm transformed by the renewing of my mind, that, you know, Torah is perfect. And it conforms me. Everything we say about it, that, you know, it protects us, blesses us, and conforms us to the image of the Son. So, like, with your teaching and just continuing in Scripture, like, that's where I can truly, like, look in the mirror, and it doesn't matter what anybody thinks or says. Like, I know what the Father has done, you know, what it just, you know, confirms what you're
saying.
And
it's still doing, and you're not finished. And,
amen.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah. He's never done, and I'm, man... Thank you for doing what you do, and thank you for this ministry.
Appreciate it.
Praise Abba for this. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Look, and I want you guys to understand this again. Yeah. Okay. Look, I want you to understand the, if you're looking for signs of the invisible hand guiding things. Abba knew the level of therapy, counseling, personal development that you would need by the time somebody got to where I'm standing in front of you, where you were at this point in your life, that he trained me in the, and I didn't go get formal training, like I went to get a therapy degree or so, you know, so, psychology, but he had me study what makes us do what we do, what makes us think how we think, how all the behavioral things from the age of like 15. So I've been studying that longer than I've been studying the scriptures. And so the insight that he has allowed for me to develop and the skill set allows for me to be able to give counsel at probably on some levels, and this is certainly not bragging, is better than when you go to some of these professionals out there who are boxed into one technique or two techniques. But I'm able to pull through and understand what is underneath, because the studying I always did was trying to figure out what is actually underneath all this, okay? And so you're able to get some incredible results and very quickly. I mean, people will tell me very often, man, 5-10 minutes, and they're like, wow. I go, anything else? They go, nope, it's fixed. I'm like, okay, there you go. But Abba gave me that growth experience in terms of developing, studying, and learning, knowing I would not need it then. I didn't use it then except for myself. I'd only use it for me to develop me. But knowing you would need it at one point. And so, you know, it's not like I got into this position thinking, oh my gosh, I got to go take some therapy courses and counseling courses because I don't have any idea what to do. I don't know why people are all messed up. And then I realized, wait a minute, no. He's actually been training me and I've been studying this for 45 years. That's a lot of years of studying this. Books, tapes, seminars, everything you can imagine to understand why we do what we do and why we don't do other things that we don't do. And understanding what makes, like, why does trauma last? I mean, these kind of questions, I feel like I have some understanding of what we're dealing with because of I've studied what makes us do all the things we do. What's going on in our heart and our head? So praise Yah for that. But he prepared me with that before I ever got this job. Okay, that was something he was preparing for before this stuff from a young teenager. And I didn't need it until more recently. I mean, I didn't use it in any kind of professional way except to work on myself, you know, for most of those 45 years. All right, Jennifer.
So, okay. When I came into this walk, I came out of a very charismatic movement and Sunday church. I've talked about that before. But one thing that was a big difference was that, you know, obviously there was a lot of focus on the New Testament and the Gospels and a lot of focus on miracles and healing and things like that. Coming into this walk, I have seen a lot. I see that there's a lot more growth in keeping Torah than there ever was in chasing some kind of miracle or healing that I generally never saw, you know. But I do have a question. I'm curious your kind of thoughts or your opinion on this, because we do see it like other places, like with Elijah and Elisha, you know, where they're doing kind of like miracles and healings. And then, you know, I forget which one came first, but like the second one is
Elijah, like, came first, then Elisha.
Elijah and then Elisha.
Yeah.
Where Elisha does like double the amount, I think, of miracles and healings, whatever. And then we kind of see that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, with Yeshua, where Yeshua is doing, you know, miracles and healings. And then, you know, it says they'll do even more. And then you see, like, say, Peter walking and his shadow is healing people and stuff. So, you know, I believe all those things happen, but I believe that, especially like during Yeshua's time, just like the same as like with Moses, when Moses is doing miracles, that at that culture at that time, there was other people like magicians and things that were doing miracles, you know, of some sort that just a normal person couldn't do. And so what I'm curious about is if you think that maybe those specific things happened with Yeshua because they needed to happen to help people to believe then because of the culture. But like right now, we don't have a lot of people walking around doing like miraculous.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yes. I'm just curious.
Yes.
What you think
about
that?
So first of all, you know, the verses actually, we have verses that actually tell us that these signs and wonders are for the unbeliever because they're there to build belief, right? And so then we have to ask, well, who's doing these things and what belief is it trying to build? Okay, so it's not stuff that's done by average people to each other. Okay, these signs and wonders are done by those who are given important leadership roles to help establish them in their roles. You see Elijah doing that. And it, by the way, Elijah was doing that at a time when he thought nobody was believing anything. Okay, and Abba had to tell him, wait a minute, there's thousands that, you know, have not bent a knee, but you just don't see it, all right? And then the passing of the mantle onto Elisha, they were used to seeing Elijah do things. They needed Elisha then to be endorsed in his role. We see the same thing with Yeshua helping to have people see that he was Messiah. Also then the apostles to be established in their authority. We don't need the signs and wonders if we're in belief. We don't need the signs and wonders. And by the way, you do get signs and wonders already. Okay, when you... I don't know if I should put it this way, but some of the things that come out of my mouth are a sign and wonder. The way, the insights of piecing certain things together are things that you've never seen or heard before because they're miraculously from him. The times you come for counsel and the insight that you have no idea even how to put the words, and I say, that's okay, I know where you're going, and then, you know, I elucidate the situation and you look at me like, oh my gosh, that's it. Those are still signs and wonders. Those are things coming from above to build and strengthen your belief, okay? They don't have to be like these huge signs and huge. We get small ones all the time, all right? Small ones all the time, all right? Look, elder came to me, had questions that bothered him for many, many, many years, answered it in 5 minutes. That's a sign and wonder that he needed to believe that I might be the guy he needs to listen to, okay? Is it something like walking on water? No, it's not on that level. Bringing manna down from heaven? No, it's not on that level. You know, having Abba bring fire down and burn down the sacrifices like Elijah was doing? No, because that was what was needed for those guys at that time. But when you're, you know, I've got a guy like Ken over here, right? Who's falling asleep, so I had to bother him. Okay, so I get a guy like Ken. Okay, Ken was a pastor. Ken, and he'll tell, guys like that will come to me and say, you know what, I've been doing this a long time. I'm not a young kid. Rabbi Thomas told me this. I've learned more, he'll say, from you in 2 or 3 years than I learned in the 50 years before, 40 years before. That's a sign, okay? It's not my whatever, it's a sign. If Abba's helping you to gain something that is in a short period of time that you couldn't in all the other time before that, isn't that a sign of something? Okay, so what is the sign supposed to strengthen? Your belief that he's using me, because he's using me to bring the sign. The one bringing the sign is so that your belief in that person in their role will be strengthened. So when Paul did, Peter did, Yeshua did, Elijah, whatever, Moses, when you see them doing things, it was so that people would believe them. Right, when Moses was first talking to Yahweh, and Yahweh said, do these things when you go and meet the elders, when you go back to Egypt, so that they believe you. And he gave him a few signs to do. Right? He had one thing where he put his hand in, pulled it out, it was leprous, put it back in, and it was fine. Right? These are not things to impress them with Yahweh, but to impress them that Yahweh had selected this man to do something. I was giving you plenty of signs that I'm doing whatever I'm doing on his behalf, either you see it or you don't. It's not in the very showy, flashy sort of form. Okay, we don't have like diamonds flying out of the sky and landing in your belly button. That's, you go to a church for that, okay? But you are getting the things that you need, and it is sometimes miraculous things that you're getting, which are setting a lot of people free from stuff that they've been struggling with for a long, long time. And that's him, not me. I'm just the instrument that he's using to do it. And so do you see those things? So again, signs and wonders have a purpose to build belief and belief in something specific. Either, like the plagues, were to build belief in the creator being almighty and all-powerful over the powers of Egypt and their so-called gods, or, as in the prophets and others, to see that they actually are the legitimate prophets. So you would know that they are real. Does that make sense? Does that answer the question? Right, Jennifer? Okay, good. All right, Delia.
I have three questions. That's okay? Well,
you got very limited time, but try. Because the children have already come down. So let's try to see if we can squeeze this in.
Okay. I did want to say, though, about the signs and wonders you were saying, you know, because Yahweh did a lot of big signs and wonders back then. If he did them now, everybody would think it was, you know, cameras and stuff anyway. So,
look, you know what? That now. You just inspired me to say something, okay? Now, for most of you, I have no idea for all of you, but for most of you, did you really think you'd ever live in Cleveland, Tennessee?
No.
Before you even found out about M2I, did you even know there was a Cleveland, Tennessee? Okay? I didn't. All right? What I'm saying is, did you not move here because there were signs and wonders that led you to come here? Okay? I mean, not necessarily in the form you see in here, the, you know, these big deal thing, but you moved your whole life because you saw signs and wonders that something was happening here you needed to be a part of. You know? I mean, it doesn't take signs and wonders to go to the local church down the street. Okay? Because it's the local church down the street. But for you to move your whole life here, and of course, we have another family recently that just left who moved all the way here. I was like, why do you move all the way here just to leave? If you saw the signs and wonders to come here, then why are you so? Because you know what it is? It's, again, it's the soil. The soil's not ready with the deep roots, and so somebody goes and just blows them away. Usually me, sometimes elder. But it's really them that blows themselves out, okay? But really, if you think about it, unless you just came here because you just wanted social interaction with others who were trying to walk this out, you came here because you saw something different happening. That's a sign. And the fact that something different was happening when you couldn't find anything, and a lot of you searched everywhere before you found this, that's a wonder, okay? Because it's something you don't see everywhere. You couldn't find it everywhere, okay? All right, Delia.
All right, so I'm going to do two questions. My first question has to do with, you've told us this before, that Yeshua speaks in parables so that it is later revealed in many cases.
Right. Or sometimes they ask him and he reveals it right there. So.
Okay. My question is, might this be also because Yeshua might want to give the people the chance to chew or ponder on or to see what we do with the parable before he reveals the point of the parable?
Well, look, I'm sure that's certainly possible. But if he didn't intend it to be understood without help, then letting you just chew on it yourself has got the large possibility of you coming up with the wrong answer. So that's not necessarily his motivation. Yes, you probably will chew it on it yourself, because all of you will come to me with things you've chewed on and don't really feel good about what you think you figured out. But he was wanting you to find the vertical structure to answer the question, okay? He's pushing you to seek the structure. So instead of just chewing it on it yourself, you go, this is why we have these Q&A sessions, right? So that you can take things and bring it to me and ask me, what does this thing mean? Why is this here? And of course, often we chew on these things by ourselves first. And it's usually the ones that we don't think we figured out that we ask questions about. You probably should ask questions about the ones you think you figured out, because you may have not figured it out correctly. So at least you get confirmation if you're right or not. All right? So, you know, some of the people I counsel come to me on a very regular basis, and they're not actually asking you a question. They're saying, this is something that I came up with in my understanding of something. Is it correct? Okay, that's a good part of counseling too. This is what I came to understand. I was struggling with this thing. This is the insight I think I got. Was that correct? Okay? And that's a good also part of using your structure. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So my second question has to do with John's question okay. at the beginning. Does the ability for Hasatan to cause division, his idea, or something that is in people's minds, thoughts, or hearts, that he takes and runs with or feeds into people, or do people create and escalate the issue?
All right. I think that was kind of a convoluted way of wording it. Okay, let's try to unravel that. I do speak Delia. It's okay. Now, look, I speak Rocky, I speak Delia, I speak a lot of people. All right, now, the thing is this, all right? Hasatan is not the creator of the problem. You already have in you these issues that he simply capitalizes on and stirs up, but it's got to be in you, okay? He cannot stir up any racism in me because I don't have any, okay? But some of you still have that in you, so he can stir it up, which is what we were talking about back when John first, you know, came here, you know, at the beginning of this study, right? He can only work with what's there. So you're the one, yes, the second part of what you said, Delia, is true. You are the one who actually is the problem. He's just identifying the weaknesses and frailties in people, and in those weaknesses and frailties, he's going to stir them up with the point of causing division, causing the body to have be at enmity with each other, to have enemies with each other, okay? But he can't stir up what you don't have. Okay, look, this country has quite a bit of racism in it, always did, but you know what? It's not everybody, and that's because not everybody has that problem. Look, it's like I've mentioned with alcoholism, okay? If I were to have a beer, I probably would end up with one beer and not drink again for months and months. I don't have an alcohol problem. I don't actually drink almost ever, okay? Why? Because I just don't like it. But if I had an alcohol problem, one beer would get me in all kinds of trouble. Because it wouldn't be just one beer. Do you understand what I'm saying? So guess what I never get tempted to do? I never get tempted to drink six of them because it's not in me, right? But I have other things that maybe tempt me that don't tempt you. Hasatan's job is to bring out whatever those things are. There's anti-Semitism in the world, not everybody. There's racism in the world, not everybody. There's all kinds of addictive behaviors and horrible behaviors, but not everybody. But whatever you've got, he has a role to bring it out so that it can be dealt with, okay? And so that's, again, the Christianity wanted you to believe he's the instigator, the creator of the problem, so he gets all the blame. That is ridiculously not true, okay? He doesn't initiate or create anything. Oh, the devil made me do it. No, you wanted to do it. He maybe encouraged you to do it, but that encouragement would have been on deaf ears if you didn't want to do it. So stop saying he made you do it. It didn't make anybody do anything. However, he knows you want to. Look, I know it's a silly thing, but picture, you got to be old enough to see these back in the cartoons and in the movies where they used to put a little angel on one shoulder and a little devil on the other, and the person's struggling with a decision, and the devil's trying to say, well, you know you want to do that. And the angel's saying, well, you know that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. Whatever it is. And they're... But it's still, they're both addressing what the person really wants to do. So the voice of encouraging you to do right or wrong. And you know what you end up doing? Whichever one is actually the right thing that's in you, what is true to you. If it's true to you that you really want to do the wrong thing, you're going to do the wrong thing. Not because the devil made you do it, but because it's really what you want. And that argument is trying to get this person to realize what they really want. The devil's saying, you know you really want to do that thing you shouldn't do. And the angel, this is a metaphor, right, in the movies, is saying, you know you really don't want to do that. You know that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. And the person's really got to look inside and go, I don't know what I really want. And he's going to make the choice, not because of either one's making a better argument, but because he has to come into congruence with what he really wants. The devil makes you do nothing. Oh, boy, he's cheering you on, though, in the thing you shouldn't do that you want to do. And he's going to keep cheering you on and getting you to feel good about doing this thing that you want to do. But if you didn't want to do it, you would not do it. Okay? You will never see me drunk. You know why? I have no interest. I don't want to go through the drinking and all this other stuff. And besides, I've seen people get drunk. It doesn't look pretty. Why would I want to do this? But I've seen people do all kinds of dumb things that are really terrible to do. So those things are not in me to do. There's a lot of things you would never do. There's other things that you would do. It's like when I called you guys all sickos. Because you want to sin. Whatever that sin is that keeps tripping up. Paul talks about it. That which I don't want to do, I do. And that which I want to do, I don't do. Because there's a screwed up battle in my head. That's what Isaiah was reading about. And we all have that screwed up battle in our head. The flesh wants to do this, and the spirit says, no, no, no. And until you figure out how to fix that, you may still do the flesh thing. And all the devil's doing is saying, yeah, go do it. It's good. Go. All right? He's a cheerleader. Look, you get that in the book of Job. Yahweh says, what do you think of Job? And Hasatan says, what do you mean what I think of him? I can't do anything to him. He's got nothing to work with. But he says, then he turns around and goes, but that's only because you give him everything. And he says, no, it's because he has nothing to work with. So tell you what, take everything away from him and see, there's nothing there to work with. He's a tzaddik. He's not going to do the things that you want him to do. He's righteous. So Hasatan takes everything away and Job passes the test. But you notice, he doesn't get Job to do anything. He doesn't make Job do anything. He takes away a bunch of stuff. He never makes Job do anything. He puts him in a position where he might be tempted to do something. Even his wife tells him, Job's wife says, curse your God and die. And Job's like, no, I'm not cursing my God. I don't see the world in that situation the way you do. He's causing or allowing. I have emunah. For whatever reason, he's allowed this terrible traumatic travesty to happen to us. But I trust him. How many of you could trust him in those kind of things? I've had some of you, when you came into Torah, said, everything got taken away from you. Well, that's okay. It happened to Job too. Then he got repaid double. But he never gave in to the temptation to blame God. Okay? And this is why that book is there, for you to see that. But you also get to see Hasatan's true role. He's the accuser of the brethren. He's looking for things to accuse you about. Oh, look at that person. He's a pervert. Look at that person. He's an idiot. Look at that person. In terms of just what, you know, just the foolishness they do regarding, when I say idiot, I don't mean he's not smart. I mean he's doing things that are just foolishly against what we were created to do. Okay? And Hasatan is always there accusing. And the father's looking at him going, that's all well and good. Bring it out so we can deal with it. I'm confident that some of my children will deal with it and get it fixed, and then you won't be able to accuse them anymore. But you got to be willing to have that stuff come out so you can deal with it. See, a lot of you are avoiding that by ignoring it, burying it, and just glossing it over. You don't want to deal with your stuff. But his job is to bring it out. All right? What does Scripture tell you? All that is hidden will be revealed. So try all you want to hide it. It's not going to work. You can try. Okay? There's a foolish effort in futility. Bury it all you want. It's going to come out. I don't mean come out necessarily in a public way. It's going to come out so you know that you have to deal with it. Then you're going to have to choose. Which side are you on? Are you on your side where you're just going to choose to ignore it and do whatever you want? Or are you going to deal with it like he wants you to and fix the problem and choose his side, his way? I mean, that's really what the battle is all about. All right, so that's zone one for everyone.